Now with McDonald's, wake up to a $4 breakfast meal deal. Wake up to a sausage McMuffin or sausage biscuit to hash browns and wake up to a hot coffee. Get your $4 breakfast meal deal.
Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher for delivery.
Today on The Grave Talks, The Spirited Queen Mary with author Nicole Strickland. The Queen Mary is a testament to British shipbuilding and a vessel whose career has outshone all others. She has earned her place in history from her distinguished service in both war and peace. But beyond her storied past lies an even more intriguing facet. Her reputation is one of the most haunted places on Earth. It seems that every passenger, visitor, and crew member has a story, and through its ghostly phenomena, the Queen Mary continues to share the tale of her unrivaled career on the high seas. This stately masterpiece unites the people of her past with those of her present, keeping both her living and haunted legends afloat. In Nicole Strickland's book, Spirited Queen Mary, Her Haunted Legend, she delves deep into the vessel's paranormal activity, sharing her numerous encounters with its ghostly activity and resident energies. Today on The Grave Talks, The Spirited Queen Mary with author Nicole Strickland. So Nicole, actually you would be my favorite guest because you have officially, this is officially our fourth episode together.
I know, I can't believe it.
I know. So if you want a little bit more on Nicole, go back and listen to one of our other episodes. I'll give you her backstory because I think we kind of shared it in all three episodes. The Afterlife Chronicles was our first one. And then we did a great episode on pets in the afterlife.
Yes.
And the most recent episode was Women on the Fringe. And that is a book that you co-wrote about women, kind of groundbreaking women in the world of the paranormal.
That's right. Took us 2 years to do that, Marie, Denise, and I, but it was great.
It was so interesting. And it's got such great reception.
Yes, it does. So it's really been wonderful. We're hoping to maybe do, we're thinking about doing a second book on it. So we'll have to see.
And it's really well done. And you're a really great writer. That book was a little different because a lot of that was women telling their stories in their words.
Right, right.
Which made it, I thought, more interesting because it was first person.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And that's kind of what you want is their experiences.
Exactly. Exactly. And with an anthology like that, you know, you're just editing mainly just for little grammar. You know, we didn't want to really over edit their material because that's their story.
Exactly.
So writing an anthology is a different type of book, but it was a lot of fun. Hard work, of course, but it was a lot of fun.
So you are a paranormal investigator, researcher, I would say as well.
Yes.
So your background definitely is in the paranormal. And I find this so fascinating because, and I think I picked up on this immediately from you, you have this connection to the Queen Mary.
I do.
And you didn't write one book. You didn't write two books. You wrote three books about the Queen Mary. I'm going to even add in so far.
Isn't that insane?
Yes. Yeah, so you have the RMS Queen Mary, Spirited Queen Mary, and Haunted Queen of the Seas.
That's right. Yes, and all three.
So I want to first talk about you and your connection with the Queen Mary because it's so strong. Like you recently started a Facebook page that I think it's a group that I belong to that says we love the RMS Queen Mary.
Yes.
And your love of that magnificent ship just shows in every post. And you have this connection to it, a love of the ship, a respect for it, as well as the spirits that reside within it.
Yes, I do.
How did that come about?
It's interesting. And, like we were talking about this before, it is very difficult to talk about the Queen Mary in such a condensed, hour of time here, hour and a half or two. So I'll try to preface this so it's not too long, but I knew about the RMS Queen Mary being a historical vessel. I just hadn't visited the ship until around 2005. So it was the year 2000. So I was a junior in college at the University of Arizona. And so one of my friends and I decided during spring break to come back out here and take one of those 3-day carnival cruises where, you know, you go to Mexico.
Oh, yeah. Because they have, they're at Long Beach. They have.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you spend a day at sea as well. And so there's a carnival cruise port right there adjacent to the Queen Mary. And so my first sight of the Queen Mary was from the backseat of a car on our way to that cruise. And I remember staring at the ship and I was blown away by it in just that first instant. I remember saying to myself, oh, I'll be back someday. So that day came 2005. And it's very difficult to put this in words. I try very hard in my books and when I do presentations about the Queen Mary as well. When I first stepped on board, and it was A deck, one of the hotel decks, the hotel lobbies there as well on A deck. So when I first stepped on board, it was this instantaneous connection to the ship. Everything felt familiar. I felt at home. I felt at peace. I felt as if I had been there before. So again, you know, it's been suggested I've had probably 4 or 5 past life regressionists contact me and say, you know, Nicole, I think you have a past life with the Queen Mary. Maybe I do, maybe I don't. I don't know. I know I do with the Titanic. But for whatever reason, there's this soul connection, this draw to the Queen Mary. And what's interesting is in my research for books, I've talked to former crew, former passengers, war brides, even World War II veterans who have said the same thing. Like even Captain John Treasure Jones, who brought the ship into Long Beach on December 9th, 1967, he said the Queen Mary is as close to a human being of any ship I've ever commanded. A very good friend of ours, war bride June Allen, she's gone down as saying, you know, the ship just chooses people in the sense that what she was saying is that the ship can tell those that can tap into her soul and really understand the Queen Mary for who she is. So it's just a very strong connection. And I do believe in all my heart that the Queen Mary is a very sentient vessel. She has a heart. She thinks, she has thought, she's conscious. I know that may sound wonky to some people, but I'm not the only person to say that. So it's just been this amazing connection. I can't really put it into words. And it's been that way ever since. So 20 years later here. So,
and what's interesting to me is that your love of the ship has not diminished. And no. Your fascination. And it's still like it's brand new to you every time I see Absolutely. You post about it.
Yeah, it's almost like it even gets stronger, too, as the years go on. It's truly amazing. And I, you know, I've talked to other people that with other historical sites where they too feel a draw to that site. So I can't really say exactly why the connection is so strong. Maybe that's not meant to be understood. Maybe it's just to more or less to be experienced. But yeah, so I call it a soul connection to the ship.
And I think a lot of us have experienced, you know, you go to a certain place and you feel that familiarity, but there's no reason why you should feel that because it's, but I remember the first time I saw the Queen Mary. I have not been on the ship. I have not stepped foot on the ship, but I went on a whale watching expedition with my nephew and my niece.
Nice.
And it was, we boarded right there. Close by. And I'm like, why are we doing this? But we'd already paid for it. And I'm like, but why aren't we going there? We couldn't
At
do
least
both.
You saw a glimpse of her, you know.
But I've said ever since then, I am going back.
Yes.
And so I will one day make it there.
Yes.
And like you said, I find it fascinating too that so many people have that draw. Like reading your book. Now the one I read was Spirited Queen Mary. But reading the book, there are so many people who feel that draw and so many people who have investigated it and had experiences.
Oh, yeah.
It's just, I would go so far as to say countless experiences with a paranormal
Countless. And what's interesting, too, is that the activity on board the Queen Queen Mary is very consistent. And so another intriguing aspect is that people from all walks of life, you can have people that have almost identical experiences 5-10 years apart. And so, and that's what to me makes it so interesting, is because people report similar types of experiences, in many cases almost identical, even in similar parts of the ship, describing certain spirits in the same way. So it's very interesting with the Queen Mary. Like I said, I think she's very sentient, but there's also, in my opinion, there's this magnetic way about her. Not so much magnetism in the physical sense, but there's this magnetic draw. And so I feel that in many ways, the Queen Mary is this giant time capsule that is both a transmitter and receiver of energy. And so she draws people in. And I think that that is one of the reasons why the spiritual phenomena on board is so popular and so profound. And if you think about it, you have all of these resident energies on board, and even others that may come through, but several resident spirits on board, passengers, captains, commodores, you name it.
So many.
And it's just so many. I mean, even the late Peter James, who was the resident psychic on board, he, I believe at one point, said that he felt there were at least 600, if not more.
Wow.
Resident energies on board. But you have, and even animals too. Even I've had experiences with cats, spirits of cats and whatnot. So you have all of this, but then you have the ship itself being sentient and almost like one gigantic spirit. So there's this interplay between her and her resident spirits. And I think it's just, they fuel each other in a really good way.
And I want to get into the history and everything, but now I have a few more questions about this.
Sure, I know.
Do you feel ever, because it doesn't feel like this to me, it feels like it's always a positive experience for you.
Yes.
It doesn't feel evil in any way, does it?
No, not at all. Not at all. My take is this. I'm not an expert. I feel like the expert is the ship itself. I label myself as a student of the Queen Mary because there is just so much to know. I mean, colleges should be teaching courses about the Queen Mary, not just in her history, but her engineering excellence and the Art Deco influence, you name it, paranormal. There's so many aspects that should be taught, in my opinion, in colleges.
Like, they teach a class on Taylor Swift. Why not, and she's brilliant, don't get me wrong, but why not teach a class on the Queen Mary? Because there are so many aspects to it.
There are. I mean, you could do a whole semester course, a whole year course on her. That's just, I mean, there's so many historical layers that you can cover. But in my opinion, like I said, I feel like I'm a student of the Queen Mary. I've been going hundreds and hundreds of times for the last 20 years. I have never encountered anything that was threatening or negative or anything like that. I feel the ship is very welcoming, very loving, that's one of her traits since her inception. She's helped bridge the old world with the new, and she has this uncanny knack of just bringing people together from all different walks of life, and she's continuing to do that. So the energy there, in my opinion, is very welcoming, curious. It's very positive.
And when you think about the number of people, I don't even know what the number might even kind of be, that have stepped foot onto the Queen Mary, whether they sailed on the Queen Mary, they've just toured the Queen Mary, they've spent the night on the Queen Mary. That, I don't even know. That
it's
has to be
multi-millions.
Yeah. So, you know, everybody, I think, kind of leaves an imprint wherever we go, that we kind of influence the location, sometimes more profoundly than other times. Like, maybe where you live is a more profound impact than the target that you go to once a week. But I think that we kind of leave that impact behind in all those people. And there's some people who were really, really connected to it.
Right. Absolutely.
That's interesting.
Absolutely. That's actually a good way to think about it. And when you talk about human emotion, practically every human emotion has been experienced on board, all the way from happiness and euphoria to fear and this kind of foreboding sense. I'm talking about during World War II when she was a troop ship. You know, the servicemen, these young men sailing on her, not knowing, you know,
they're coming back
from the next. Right. So all this human emotion, too, I think plays into it.
So let's dive into the history of it. So they began the concept of the Queen Mary in like 1926.
Around there. Yeah, it all started in around 1831 when British merchant Samuel Cunard, he envisioned this idea to build this vessel after watching a steamboat approach port, and I believe it was Halifax, Nova Scotia. So it was, 1838 when Cunard convinced the British government to grant him a building contract. That was the new Royal Mail Steam Packet Company, later called Cunard. So that company would offer 2 monthly voyages for mail service between Liverpool, Halifax, and Boston. So the first liner to do this was the Britannia. So then at a time when all these countries were competing, fierce competition between shipbuilding companies, that's to build the largest, grandest liner. That's when the Queen Mary's design concept began, and it was around 1926. And so John Brown and Company was at that time the most established shipyard in the world. So Cunard declared that company in Clydebank, Scotland, to build the Queen Mary. And her job hull number was known as 534. And so, yeah, so John Brown Company was given this $30 million contract on December 1st, 1930, for constructing the Queen Mary. And so that's kind of how it all began there.
Now, I could be wrong, but the Titanic was built and sank before then, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
It was 15, 20 years, something like that before then.
1912.
So that was supposed to be the Grand Lady of the Seas. And then, so to undertake a ship like the Queen Mary, that would have still been fresh in their minds.
Oh, absolutely. And what's interesting is there's a lot of comparisons between the Queen Mary and Titanic. Some people think the Titanic was larger, but no, the Titanic could actually fit inside the Queen Mary.
Uh-uh.
And so during the Depression, so building began on the Queen Mary around November 1931. And so she was ready to launch the Queen Mary in May of 1932. Of course, with the Depression, that halted everything. Construction stopped. Over 3,000 ship workers lost their jobs. But it was interesting because Cunard board chairman, Sir Percy Bates, received thousands of letters from the public saying, please finish job 534. Please build this ship. So as a means to fund the continuation of the Queen Mary building, the British government subsidized the finishing of the Queen Mary. So in a way to do that, the Cunard Company had to merge with the White Star Line, which was the builder of the Titanic. So it became Cunard White Star, and that merger lasted, I believe, until around October of 1947, I think. So, yeah, so there's another Titanic connection there. But yeah, I mean, I go on board the Queen Mary, and almost every time I'm on board, I'll hear someone talking about the Titanic. So there's this interesting connection, even on her maiden voyage, May 27, 1936. That was the debut of her maiden voyage. I think it was 2 days in when Commodore Britton passed by the exact sinking spot of the Titanic. They laid out a wreath in the water and did this commemoration ceremony. So, you know, and some people have suggested that some Titanic passengers and crew in spirit form may have come aboard the Queen Mary. I think that's very possible. I myself have seen, I can't say necessarily passengers, but I've seen apparitions in officer uniform. And you can tell in some of my experiences that the uniforms were an era or two earlier. So from the Titanic era versus the Queen Mary. And I always tell people, if you see someone walking around in officer's attire or captain or commodore's attire, look to see if they have a name tag. If they don't, that's a sign that maybe it's somebody spiritual, because all the crew wear name tags.
But you know, who knows exactly what happens when we pass? Are you stuck to the Titanic? Like, could you go anywhere? And it's like, that's a beautiful ship. It passed right by and it attracted, just as it attracts you or anyone else. It could attract spirits.
Yeah, I think you hit it on the nail. I mean, think of all the people that, like me, fall in love with the Queen Mary. And we have a core group of dear friends. We're known as the Clan Mary. And we get together. It's just, I've met some fabulous friends. Oh my gosh, I can't even, there's too many to name. But we get together every year. I mean, sometimes a few times a year, especially during like ceremonies, like the upcoming 90th anniversary of her launch. And it's just a bunch of ship enthusiasts and people who love the Queen Mary. So yes, if you think about all the millions of people that have stepped on board and you count how many of those like us who love the Queen Mary, yes, you can tell why, you know, she's so popular. But yes, Queen Mary, 1,019.5 feet, 81,237 gross tons. So that tells you at that time, in the 30s, what a large vessel she really was and still is. But in, you know, but some of the modern day ships, she's looks so tiny compared to some of them.
But when you consider she was built almost 100 years ago.
Exactly.
I mean,
so there you go.
Technology's kind of changed.
Absolutely.
And it was
Absolutely.
One of those ships that kind of was built to impress, obviously. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. they wanted to impress the first class travelers, but actually for some of the, I don't know what they referred to them as, third class travelers or below the deck travelers or whatever, but they actually had pretty decent accommodations as well.
They really did. And it's been said that third class on the Queen Mary was better than a lot of other ships. You think that, okay, first, second, and third, the first class is going to be on the top levels, then second class will be below that, and third class will be below that. With the Queen Mary, it was different. So it wasn't necessarily based on where you are on the deck. It was based where you are in the ship. So a lot of the first class or cabin class pre-war passengers were in the center or midships part of the ship. Second class was more aft, I believe, and then third class was more forward. So they were more subjected to the pitching, you know, the pitching of the ship during high seas. And so a lot of people, and there actually, I believe there were a few deaths. I know there's one in particular, a man actually fell down the stairs, the third class stairway forward of the ship, fell and passed away during, you know, high seas. So a lot of those passengers, you can imagine, you know, probably felt like being on a roller coaster.
Oh my gosh, yes.
And so the Queen Mary, she rolled a lot. So she was known for that and then got stabilizers in 1958. But yeah, there were accidents on board, people, you know, hitting their heads and certain other types of illnesses. So there were documented deaths on board for both, you know, passengers and crew. So, and in the isolation ward, the replica of the isolation ward, there's plaques on there that will list all the names of those who tragically passed away while on board.
And it wasn't too long after she was built and she had some successful crossings of the Atlantic. Mm-hmm. As soon as I said Atlantic, then I'm like, but now she's on the Pacific. But then she was commissioned because World War II broke out. And so then everything changed for that ship.
Everything changed. Right. It's, you know, August of 1939, Bob Hope was on board and he was doing his comedy routines as a way to, you know, try to appease these nervous passengers because you know, Germany invaded Poland. And so the Queen Mary, along with her sister liner, the Queen Elizabeth, they were a requisition for war service, mainly due to their size and speed. So that's when the Queen Mary was painted a camouflage gray. She was known as the Gray Ghost. And Winston Churchill, who sailed on board many times, M-Deck was reserved for his entourage, even as a suite on board on M-Deck that I've stayed in. Very fabulous. He even said that, gosh, what is the quote? Built for the arts of peace, the Cunard Queens. Well, I used to have it memorized. I'd have to refer to my book. But basically what it says is that the Queen Mary, along with her sister liner, lessened their duration of World War II by at least a year.
Really?
And so that goes to show, I mean, she helped save the lives of many women, men and children on board. I mean, there was even a story, gosh, I'm forgetting his name. He was scheduled to board the Queen Mary with his family. He didn't have the required red J stamp. This was for standing for Jewish. So I guess his family had to go back and get the required J stamp. The Queen Mary actually waited for him.
Oh,
and he
wow.
said that if the ship, he said that if the ship had left,
right.
yeah, God knows what would have happened.
Right.
So he credits the Queen Mary for saving his family. And there are other stories like that as well.
And
so it's pretty phenomenal.
During that time, obviously, you know, these troops weren't getting on to a ship that was, you know, had all the Turkish bath and a chapel and a gymnasium. They might have had those things, but they kind of repurposed the whole ship. So it didn't
Absolutely.
Have all these high-end amenities.
Oh, yes.
That you would have found.
Yeah, they had to take away a lot of her expensive, you know, china and art deco and paintings and whatnot. And they had to store those in warehouses. So yes, when you think about the Queen Mary's history, she went through a lot of different stages between, okay, you have the building of the ship, then you had to prepare for servicemen on board, thousands of servicemen, even prisoners of war, German, Italian prisoners of war. At one point, she was served as a hospital ship and carried injured soldiers to the United Kingdom. And so she went through all these stages. And then when she went back into being a peacetime ocean liner, she had to then go through more changes to get her back into that state. And then when she came into Long Beach, yes, I mean, there was I believe it was Sea Deck, known as the Burma Road, where you could see down the entire hall from one end to the other. There's a lot of changes that went into place when the ship came into Long Beach. Too much to discuss here, but it's insane.
How did she even end up at Long Beach?
So there were a lot of bids for the Queen Mary when she was in retirement. And so Long Beach bid for $3.45 million, and Long Beach won out. And so what's interesting, I think Long Beach is the second after, gosh, I forget what city in Florida it is, as being known for its Art Deco influence. So, yeah, so
oh.
Long Beach, yeah, there was a bid to maybe turn her into a high school in New York City. I think even Hugh Hefner at one point wanted her for his stuff. I'm not going to even go there, but I mean, there were all these bids. You know, I'm not going to even mention that. But there were all these bids, so Long Beach won out at $3.45 million. And so as a way to fund the last great cruise, it was known. And it departed on October 31st in Southampton, and it was a month-long cruise. It went to all these different ports and then finally sailed into Long Beach on December 9th, 1967. Captain John Treasure Jones, a very beloved captain, my dear friend and current honorary commodore of the Queen Mary, Everett Horde, was really good friends with him. So he brought the ship into Long Beach, and that's when he said, you know, he's glad that the ship came into Long Beach. California's climate will be good to her. And it was very emotional for him because he went on saying, you know, finished with engines. And a lot of the people that were on board that last cruise, which was her 1,001st peacetime voyage, were actually on the maiden voyage. So it was very sentimental and very nostalgic for many of them.
Once she, and I don't know what the word you use for a ship that size, once she was moored there, docked there, she's never left since then, right?
No, she actually, I think she was at Pier H temporarily and then was moved to her current pier, Pier J, I believe it is. And so they had to do a lot of construction and get her ready for building status, because in a sense she's classified, I believe, as a building, or was classified as a building when she came into Long Beach. So she had to meet all these, you know, regulations and whatnot. So she opened for tours in Long Beach, I believe it was May of 1971. And so different, you know, management companies have come through. We had the Rather Corporation, PSA Hotels, all these different management companies. Her current one, Evolution Hospitality, in my opinion, is perhaps the best management company the ship has ever had.
Have all these various management companies kind of left their mark on her, or is it all been going in the same direction to get her back to the glory that she once was?
You know, yes and no. I would say that, speaking of her current management company, and we had COVID, so a lot of us were worried that maybe COVID could affect her. But again, she's known the Queen Mary is surviving all these obstacles. She's like a phoenix rising from the flames. No matter what is thrown at her, she just prevails. And so she's operating in the black now, which is really good. But the management company, in my opinion, is their marketing is fabulous. There's all kinds of events that they're doing mm-hmm. that are new that weren't done previously. So they're really doing a good job in attracting not just her known visitors that have been coming for years, but attracting new clientele and new types of people coming on board. So they're really, really doing a good job. I mean, she's an economic front runner for, you know, for Long Beach and LA. And what's interesting too is the city of Long Beach now has control. So in that, you haven't seen that since, I think it was like 1978. So it was June, I believe, of 2023 when Long Beach or the city of Long Beach regained control of her. And that was the first time in over 40 years that that's been done. So she's really heading in a good direction.
And now, and
post-COVID, that's fabulous because, you know, people were worried, not just for her, but other businesses
right.
as well.
Especially anything like that, that was
right.
Not necessary in your budget. You know, it's like, yes. That's an extra expense. Nobody's going to go back to that for a long time.
Oh, no, I know. And they're doing all kinds of renovations, ranging from small to large, you know, removing the lifeboats. And I know a lot of people miss the lifeboats, but they were old and decrepit and they were causing some issues. So, you know, new HVAC system, deck repairs, you name it, just all these little repairs, like I said, some ranging from small to large. And you go on board now and I can see and visualize what's been done. And it's, you know, like I said, she's really heading into a very good direction and always has been, in my opinion. She prevails. She really does.
And you can actually, and it's a hotel too as well, correct? Or is it currently a hotel?
Yeah, it's a hotel. It's so you can stay on M going from top to bottom, M, A, or B. And a lot of her suites are on M deck. I've stayed on all the decks. I've stayed in there's over 300 rooms. I've stayed in probably a third of them by now. And they're all different. They're all unique. When you stay, I mean, you can stay in a suite, you can stay in a family room, which has, you know, the larger room with a smaller room adjoining it. You can stay in an inside stateroom or a standard room. I recommend doing the deluxe staterooms or higher just because you will get that more of an art deco feel with the original wood paneling. And there were like 56 different varieties of woods from all over the world that went into the interior appointments of the ship. So I definitely recommend staying in at least the deluxe stateroom, if not higher. Splurge, stay in a suite. You know, they're all great.
Right.
But yeah, hotel. restaurants, shops, events. You can get married on board. There are a lot of anniversaries that are held on board. They even actually had the American Idol auditions on board. I forget what year that was.
Oh, that's right.
My cousin tried out, but he didn't make it. But I forget what year that was. But yeah, so all kinds of different events, and just queenmary.com. That's her website. Follow her Instagram too, because there are all kinds of little reels and marketing ads and things like that that really entice you to come on board and partake in a lot of her activities.
One thing I found interesting, because it seems to me it all depends on the management company. Some places don't want to have anything to do with paranormal things, and others kind of embrace it. And it seems like the Queen Mary kind of embraces that paranormal side.
She does. She does. And you know, from a paranormal researcher point of view, I find that that's a benefit. Some people want nothing to do with the paranormal, and that's completely fine. But she's known.
Exactly.
You know, as one of the top 10. She's known globally for that. And so I think it is smart on the management side to embrace that. And it is a moneymaker for her. It helps bring in money. They have paranormal tours. They have, well, it was Shacktober. They're bringing back its annual Halloween event, which is Dark Harbor, which is a huge moneymaker. You know, does the Queen Mary kind of sensationalize? When I say the Queen Mary, does the management, people running it, sensationalize the paranormal? That's hard to say. I think that they market it well, because they want people to come in and experience the ship for what she is, not just her paranormal. So, I think it's a benefit. I really do. And, you know, like I said, I've talked to people that have gone on and will flat out believe that there's no paranormal activity. And I think that's fine. It's not my duty to convince you, but I have talked to several people, more than I can count, that have said, you know, young people, old people, you know, I wasn't really a believer, but then I went on the Queen Mary and she changed my opinion. I've heard that, like I said, countless times. So there is some, in my opinion, yeah. I mean, haunted is I always hate the word haunted, just because to me, there's like this negative connotation.
Yeah.
My definition for a haunting is, okay, the energies that are there, whether they're earthbound or spirit, there has to be some sort of historical tie, right? You have that with the Queen Mary. And so she is, in my opinion, if you're going to use that word, haunted. Yes, I would classify her as that, but very paranormally active. And again, it goes back to her being sentient as well.
With all the research that you've done on the Queen Mary and written 3 books, I'll throw out again, do you see historically some stories of paranormal activity from, you know, 20, 30, 50 years ago?
Yes, absolutely. And I tell people that no matter where you are in the ship, you can have an experience. There are hot spots, of course, like there are with other locations, where people have reported more personal accounts or maybe have captured more evidence. But it's pretty much fair game wherever you are. Very audio friendly. So a lot of disembodied vocalizations, great for EVP, many EVPs, many audible voice phenomena. ITC, because obviously reception wise, it's not the greatest. Upper decks, you can do that. But you have to remember, if you're in the hotel area and you're doing an ITC session, you know, the walls are thin. So, you know, people are going to probably complain. But there is a section in our deck forward, right above the damage that was done during when the Curacao was sliced in half, where and it was a crew space. They had like different quarters for crew and whatnot in there. It's the rope locker room. That has been a really good area for ITC. We've had some good results there. So very audio friendly, very visual. So you can have full-bodied apparitional sightings. You can have peripheral or straight on shadow figure sightings. So very, very visual. But when you see something, many people have reported seeing, okay, former captains, former commodores, or servicemen, or people dressed in 1930s, 1940s, 50s, 60s attire. So, and even a lot of the audio sessions that we've done, there are answers to our questions that will correlate to whatever the question is that's being asked or correlate to the history. So yeah, it's intriguing in that respect.
One thing about the book I found interesting is you kind of break it down into different areas of the ship, like the pool slash dressing room area, like the cargo area, the hotel area. Mm-hmm. And then you include investigative tips.
Yes.
And like in one, I think it might have been the cargo area, you even suggested if you have asthma, take your inhaler with you. And I thought that is probably a really helpful tip.
I don't know why. Well, I was probably
that's
just
really
thinking
good.
Outside of the box.
Yeah, because yeah. I'm like, that is good information for somebody. But it is interesting that you have these tips for the different places on the ship.
Absolutely. And it's, you know, the book was written many years ago, so things have changed, you know, post-COVID. They're still doing renovations. And I believe you can still reserve a private investigation. I don't know if the policies to schedule that are different. I know that one of my friends wants to come out with the group, and he was asking me, you know, can we schedule an investigation? I said, you know, let me contact the Queen Mary, see if, you know, if the process to schedule it is the same. They have a new a paranormal project on board that is pretty much new. It's only about 6 months old. It's called the Gray Ghost Project. So Aidan Sinclair, and he was doing this pre-COVID as well. He does seances and as well as paranormal investigations as well. I have not done those myself, but I've heard good things. So, but you know, if you are a paranormal investigator and you want to go on board, let's say you're staying for a couple of nights, you can do your own little private investigating. I would just obviously, you know, be professional and be smart and be courteous to other guests. You know, you don't want to be loud or anything like that. But you know, if you're staying in a stateroom, do a little EVP mm-hmm. session in your room if you want. Just try to be courteous because, you know, the walls are thin. You don't want to be doing ITC or anything like that, but because it can be noisy. But, you know, walk around, get a feel. I really think with the Queen Mary, especially if you haven't been, but even if you have been and you're used to the ship, as with all investigations, do like a vigil. You know, walk around, get a sense for what you're picking up and what you're sensing, and trust your gut as to if there's a certain area that you're permitted to go in.
Right.
Go. And, you know, so, but just be professional about it. Be smart about it. You don't want to go any place that is off limits, you know, that you don't have permission to go. But I do recommend the tours. There's a great one called the Paranormal Shipwalk Tour. It's about 2 to 2.5 hours, and you get to go to a lot of areas throughout the ship, and they'll talk about the history. They'll talk about the different locations within the ship. They'll share stories. So I do recommend that as well.
And that wraps up part one of our conversation about the Spirited Queen Mary with author Nicole Strickland. You can get more information about Nicole at her website, NicoleDStrickland.com. You can find all of her books there, on Amazon, or wherever books are sold. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advanced episodes, everything commercial free, become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts, where you can try it for 3 days free, or go to patreon.com/thegravetalks, and you'll find everything there, also all ad-free. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us at The Grave Talks, thank you very much for listening.